WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The latest old-fashioned economic indicator, the post office is going broke with a $6 billion deficit, up from about $3 billion last year. The Postmaster General asked Congress yesterday for permission to cut mail delivery to 5 days a week. Do you care about the post office anymore? Or is it all bills and catalogs and you get the things you really need by email and text and IM and things? Anyway, I have a friend traveling in South America and she's keeping up with people via Twitter, not exactly sending postcards. Let's talk to Dan Blair. He is the chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission, a government agency that must approve rate changes requested by the U.S. Post Office. Mr. Blair, thanks very much for coming on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good. So we, you know, in a way, it's a miracle that the post office can deliver letters for 42 cents and do it in a day or two almost anywhere. How do you get a piece of mail from New Jersey to Connecticut for 42 cents, never mind from New York to California?
Well, you get that. I was going to say, you get that same 42-cent price if you're mailing from New York to Anchorage, Alaska. We have a phenomenal mail system, but it's certainly suffering some steep financial strains right now.
Do you lose money on a typical letter?
Right now, first class pays its way, and we have standardized and uniform rates for first class. So that letter that may go from one block in New York City to the next block receives, you know, can achieve the same rate as the letter that goes across country. So you're not losing money on that letter, but costs are going up, and the Postal Service is struggling on how to make ends meet.
Is the post office an example of how government has trouble innovating? The post office once had a monopoly, basically, but FedEx and the other private carriers came in and, you know, kind of ate your lunch for package delivery, even though they charged a lot more.
Well, it's not even a question of FedEx or UPS. And actually, they're working with the post office to, because the post office has the most efficient home delivery network of any of the carriers out there. But it's a question of email. You mentioned a friend of yours who's traveling through South America right now and communicating via Twitter. You have a lot of what we call electronic diversion. How many people do you know still pay their bills by mail? Probably just a handful. Most people are now going to the Internet, or a substantial number are going to the Internet. That first-class mail stream, that is our flagship product, and we've seen declining volumes in that area for quite a while now. But the economic situation that came on us last year has really impacted them. Not only has first-class mail declined precipitously, so has advertising mail. And so between the two of them, the Postal Service is really hurting right now. Yesterday, I testified before Congress, and we're predicting they may face a cash crunch by the end of this year if they don't get some kind of legislative relief.
Now, listeners, we'll open up the phones for two groups of you. Any postal workers listening? Just postal workers who are in the office, or maybe you're not on your shift right now, 212-433-WNYC. Can you be our uncommon economic barometers here? How do you see the economic problems of the post office reflected in your job? 212-433-9692. Or maybe you're listening on a portable radio right now while delivering the mail on your route. Call us. A shout out for postal workers. 212-433-WNYC. And everyone else, will save a few lines for you. Do you disdain the post office? Do you see postal workers as being like Cliff Clavin from Cheers? Do you secretly love the post office and its service and consider your mail carrier like a member of the family? What would you suggest for getting the post office out of the red? 212-433 WNYC 433-9692 for Dan Blair, Chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, Mr. Blair, here's a post that came into our website. This says, with overnight delivery service and email so commonplace today, is there really any reason that we need mail delivered more than every other day? Unfortunately, it means laying off tons of workers, but just like newspapers and vinyl record albums, with all the new digital alternatives, big demand for these services just are never coming back. What do you say to that listener?
Well, I'd say to that listener that there are a lot of people who look forward to receiving their mail every day. Whether or not we need it 5 days a week or 6 days a week or something less than that is part of the conversation that Congress is beginning to have. We did a study for Congress last year, the independent commission did, and we pointed out that 5 days a week delivery could save the Postal Service up to $2 billion, but we don't know what the impact on volume is going to be. And volume is what helps keep rates down. So there are a lot of unanswered questions out there.
In other words, you could shave $2 billion off your $6 billion deficit by ending 1 day a week delivery?
Yes, if they did that for the entire year. And that's not what the Postal Service has indicated they want to do, though, however. They've indicated that they want to target the low-volume months. And so we need a little bit more. We need that plan fleshed out a little bit more.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Jan on Long Island who still wants to get letters in the mail. Hi, Jan. Jan, you're on the air. Can you hear me? Well, maybe not. Let's try Allison in Manhattan, who I think is in the same boat. Allison?
I am. I object to being forced to pay my bills online. It's not something I'm personally comfortable with, and I think if we continue to have the economic problems that we're having, fewer and fewer people will be able to afford computers. And so how are they to manage their bills online, if we're not paying our bills?
Well, it's not going to go away by anybody's scenario, but if it was 5 days a week for mail delivery, would that disturb you?
You know, I could live with that, but I think the post office's assumption, as your guest stated, that everybody's paying their bills online, or the majority of them are, is wrong.
Allison, thank you very much. Mr. Blair, would it necessarily be Saturday that goes away, or might it be one other day of the week?
Well, the Postal Service has indicated yesterday that it would be Saturday. Others have suggested it might be maybe Tuesday, which is a low-volume day. And I wanted to respond to your listener's question and comment that I'm not assuming everyone pays their bills online. I still pay some of my bills by mail. However, we've seen this diversion over the last decade of more and more people paying their bills online. But she brings up a good point, is that the Postal Service is part of our critical infrastructure. What happens when if, for instance, you suffer a blackout in Manhattan that would last for days? You couldn't get access to your computer. When we had in Kentucky this past year, when they suffered from some horrible ice storms, the post office remained open, and it was one of the first of the government entities that got back up and running to deliver the mail. And several years ago, there was a strike by UPS. And that strike hurt the economy, and who do people rely on and fall back on? It was the Postal Service to make those parcel deliveries. So we have to keep in mind we have a critical infrastructure that there is a need for, and you don't really realize that need for it until something happens and you have to rely on it.
Tom on Staten Island has a suggestion. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yes, my suggestion is residential mail every other day, 3 days a week, and business mail 5 days a week. That's it. And put the post office on a paying basis.
What do you mean, paying basis?
On a paying basis.
Oh, we have to charge. We pay as customers for each piece of mail we receive, not just send?
Get the income somewhat in line with the expense.
Right. So, thank you, Tom. Will you have to, even if you go to 5 day a week mail delivery, and that shaves $2 billion off your $6 billion deficit this year, and you'll have another $6 billion deficit next year, according to the testimony that I saw, does that mean you're going to have to reopen the contract with the Postal Workers Union?
That's a good question for postal management. I don't know if they're going to reopen it or not.
Here is a postal worker in Bed-Stuy, Cassius. Cassius, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I do have a suggestion for how the whole system as a whole can save some money.
Uh-huh.
I do notice a lot of a lot of workers just simply wasting all the rubber bands that are used throughout the entire system, throwing rubber bands down on the sidewalks and streets all over. I mean, it may seem, you know, it seems like a tiny cost or maybe a ignorable cost at first, but I'm sure it adds up, you know,
rubber
all
bands.
Over the whole nation. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know what he was really getting at, but AJ on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, AJ.
How you doing? Just a couple of points here. I think, for one thing, I don't think the public is going to stand for five-day delivery. I think that's going to be a problem with businesses, with residences. And also, I think one
and
of the
you're
reasons...
just to be clear, you're a letter carrier, correct?
Yeah, I'm an 18-year letter carrier, and I've seen a huge change in the way the business is run since I started in 1990.
What's the biggest change?
One of the biggest changes is that management has adopted a policy of micromanagement, and they just have a lot of people spending a lot of time following carriers and looking at every little thing we do, when the bottom line is we know our job, and these people are making more than we're making, just to drive around in the company car, just to make sure this is right, that's right. I mean, we used to have a system of more trust and more employee incentive back in the days of the early 1990s, and the whole business as a whole was just a better business. There wasn't, you know, the problems that we're having today.
Dan Blair, chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission, do you agree with this letter carrier?
Well, I think that there have been a lot of changes since 1990. We've seen automation take place. We've seen a really growing private mail business in terms of companies springing up to do a lot of pre-sorting. Right now, before the economic crisis hit, we had a $900 billion mail industry in this country. Postal Service was the heart of it, but you had a lot of private companies out there that were doing a lot of work for the Postal Service. The question is, how do you keep that industry thriving? We're talking hundreds of thousands of jobs, and we want to make sure that the environment is out there that once the recovery returns, that people have the option, if they want, to be able to use the mail again.
AJ, do you shoot off a lot of rubber bands during your workday?
I conserve all of my rubber bands as much as possible, but even though I conserve, it seems like there still just isn't enough, but I've always conserved.
Thank you very much. Dan Blair, are there, I mean, your organization audits the post office, if I've got this right, and you tell them whether they can hike their rates when they ask for a rate hike. So do you look...
A little bit. Our agency does now is we're the regulator of the Postal Service. We oversee their rates and fees. We also look at their service standards, and we look at their financial operations as well. It's a little bit broader than just... We used to be called the Postal Rate Commission. But a postal reform law that passed in 2006 greatly changed what the regulatory commission did.
So do you look at the books, though, and tell them that their operation is too bloated or anything like that in terms of judging rate requests?
Well, what we're going to be doing is we make sure that the public understands what's behind a rate request. Right now, the new system that's in place says the Postal Service can't raise postal rates for each class of mail more than the rate of inflation. And so the commission last week approved a Postal Service request to raise rates, and the service is going to raise rates in May by, on average, 3.8%. You're going to see price of the first class stamp go up from 42 to 44 cents. Prices for magazines, for other mail is going to go up as well. But generally, this tracks inflation.
Jim in Morristown has a magazine question. Jim?
Yeah. We've always gotten good service from our letter carriers in Brooklyn and here in Morristown. And also, the service has to provide service to areas that aren't economic to do so because it's a public service. Now, my main point, I understand that the rate structure has been set for magazines so that mass mailings of huge circulations like Newsweek or Time magazine get better rates than smaller independent journals, even as large as Nation and New Republic and National Review.
Okay, is that true? I know your time is running short. Is that true because of volume discount? Dan Blair?
Oh, okay, Brian. What's happened with periodicals is that we've tried to make that class more efficient, but the class as a whole has lost last year almost $440 million. As a whole, the periodicals aren't paying their way, and there's a problem in that other mailers are subsidizing them generally.
Are there regional differences here? Do New York and New Jersey and Connecticut subsidize other parts of the country or the reverse in any way? Do you keep those kind of metrics?
I don't know what you mean by subsidize, but each class of mail is required to pay its own way. And for first-class mail, we say that there's a uniform rate. So if you want to mail a first-class letter in Manhattan, it's going to cost you in May 44 cents. If you want to mail it to Alaska,
right,
it's going to cost you 44 cents.
Well, that's
cents.
Classes of mail. But in New York, mail carriers often stand still in a big apartment building lobby and sort into mailboxes that are like little slots, teeny-weeny studio apartments for our bills and magazines. In the suburbs, they walk block to block, house to house to deliver the mail. In rural areas, they sometimes drive mailbox to mailbox. Is one not more expensive?
I think you have to look at how that's costed. Generally, that's spread out. The letter carrier's time is spread out over what they call institutional costs. Their time that they spend on the street is overhead.
All right. Dan Blair is the chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission. He testified yesterday before Congress, as did others, on the financial crisis that the post office is in, possibly needing to result in 5-day a week rather than 6-day a week mail delivery. Thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate
your time.
Hey, Brian,
thank you. Have a good day.
And let's talk to one more postal worker. Here's Lee in Manhattan calling in. Hi, Lee. Lee, are you there? Uh-oh. Well, let's see. Do we have any other postal worker? Let's try Lee. Line 10? Okay. Curtis in Paramus. You're on WNYC. Hi, Curtis.
Yes, good morning. I'd just like to make a comment and piggyback off of one of the other callers who mentioned something about the micromanaging that's there. I think that maybe not enough is doing it. Not enough is going into service. I think right now, this economic time, we need to concentrate more on customer service, and I think that we should be more innovative and find ways to make our service better.
Where's your route?
It's in Paramus.
And what's the best thing and the worst thing about it?
I think that there's just a lot of micromanaging. I think management looks at more. They manage by number. They manage off of paper instead of letting paper manage. There's a lot of management there, and I just don't think that we – I think the services – we don't concentrate more on the customer service aspect. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of competition out there. And we're more paying more attention to things that doesn't concentrate on the customer service aspect for the customer.
Gotcha, Curtis. Thank you very much. So management wants to cut the pension contributions. The letter carriers want to cut management. It's the way of the world. The post office in crisis, like everything else, it seems right now. Now, here's something you can do with us later in the show. We came across a story in The Guardian today about the U.S. Border Patrol using an unlikely tool in the war on drugs and illegal immigration. It's a network of webcams set up across the 1,250-mile U.S.-Mexico border, not just for law enforcement officials to keep their eyes on, but for anyone to. The Guardian angle is that this has become a big thing among pubgoers in Australia. And anyone, anywhere, watching online who sees something suspicious can report it to the Border Patrol. For some reason, pubgoers around Australia have really gotten into this. And it got us wondering, how many of you have webcams that you follow? So at 11:45 this morning, we will have a call in for anyone who follows a webcam for fun or law enforcement or whatever. We want you to log on at 11:45 to your favorite webcam, call in and tell us what you're seeing in real time, okay? Make that date about an hour from now, 11:45 this morning, with your favorite webcam view up on your computer. Brian Lehrer. Correction. I was just told we're not going to do that at 11:45. We're going to do that at 11:30. So less than an hour from now, 11:30 for your live real-time webcam views, okay? And coming up in a minute, if you think, two stories of entrepreneurial philanthropy, one local, one global, and if you think micro-lending is just something for developing nations, we have a very interesting story of this very close to home. Stay tuned.